You're listening to the Pharmacy Podcast Network.
We're excited to have RX Destroyer sponsoring the Pharmacy Podcast Network. RX Destroyer is transforming the drug disposal space by bringing your facility and patients a simple and effective method of safely disposing of unused, unwanted medications. If you're worried about drug diversion and federal rules compliance, learn how RX Destroyer can keep you DEA compliant by checking out www.rxdestroyer.com/Pharmacy Podcast Network.
Pharmacy Podcast Nation, to receive 10% off your first order, use the code PHARMACY10.
Pharmacy Podcast Nation, this is Todd Urey, founder of the Pharmacy Podcast. What a great opportunity we have today as a nation and as healthcare providers, pharmacists out there. Get ready for an amazing episode. Excited about this one. Mr. Alan McGill, I want to welcome you to the Pharmacy Podcast.
Thank you for having me.
So let's set the stage right away and let the pharmacist owners know. They know by the title of what we're talking about today, but let's talk about proper drug disposal and diversion, because this is a subject that is extremely important, but not a lot of healthcare professionals really have dug into the weeds on this. And I think there's more impact to this on public health than what people realize.
Yeah, I think that it's really an important topic, and every healthcare provider should be having conversations with patients when they're administering or dispensing medications to those folks about how to properly get rid of those medications. And one of the things that we do, or one of the things that I've been doing, is talking to different folks about that in different groups, because there are so many medications, and it's not just about the non-controlleds. It's also any medication at all, given the current climate that we have, that they have to dispose of those medications properly.
So let's back up and get a little bit of a background on yourself and the experience that you've had. How many years have you been in this sector of healthcare, and tell us about what you actually do?
Well, I spent 20 years, I'm with the Office of Attorney General 21 years, but I spent 20 years in the Bureau of Narcotics Investigation and Drug Control. And I started out doing undercover work for the Attorney General's office and spent about 10 years doing that. And when I say that, I wasn't just driving folks up to a door and having them run in and run out. I was actually getting to know people and buying drugs and had a false identification and a car with plates that matched that and those sort of things. And I spent a lot of time doing that, and I enjoyed that. I was a drug task force coordinator for a while. I was also a computer voice stress analyst. I also did wiretapping. I'm an A&B technician. I did just about everything you can think of in narcotics. I was on the clan lab team, which dismantled methamphetamine labs. And I did a lot of those things. And then in 2007, there was an opening in the Erie office for a drug diversion agent. Okay. And I decided that I wanted to give that a try. And so I joined the drug diversion unit team and started learning all over again how to do those types of investigations, because they're specific. And at that time, we had really a lot of forged scripts, a lot of altered scripts. Paper was easily forged, stolen otherwise. And so we did a lot of those cases. We did cases involving hospitals, of course, and doctor cases that were improperly prescribing, or folks that had an addiction issue. And the thing that I liked about diversion, probably more than undercover work, was you actually got to help some people, and you got to see that they could recover from what was happening in their lives. So I had a lot of cases with nurses and pharmacists where they would get arrested for diverting medications in their facility, but they were afforded the opportunity to go to their rehabilitation.
That's great.
Opportunities. So they would get their lives back. So that was kind of nice. So I started doing that. And then last year, last April, my boss asked me if I was interested in coming to this unit. We call it public engagement. And so I'm still an agent, I'm still law enforcement, but what I do now is I do trainings. And so I travel around Pennsylvania and I speak to any healthcare facility or association that wants to have me there to talk about how medications are diverted out of their facility or away. And so we have things like hospitals and nursing homes and any place or any organization that wants that. And I also speak to universities. I have about 20 plus university programs, clinician programs that I also provide that. And it's all free. And the idea is to give them as much information as we can and train them what to look for and then what to do about it when they find it and how they can partner with our office about this. So that's part of what I do. And then we expanded that a little bit to the general public. And one of those programs, of course, has to do with safely disposing, safely tracking, and safely storing their medications.
Yeah, the disposal aspect of this, and we know this because of a partnered organization that's been giving us a lot of great content. Dr. Brevi was sponsored by the RX Destroyer team, and he really talked on proper drug disposal and all of the ways that you wouldn't think that disposal is impacting the environment as well as your kids who are getting into your medicine cabinet. You see that firsthand, Alan, where the drugs have sat around, maybe the Oxycontins or whatever, and all of a sudden now the kids get a hold of it or somebody takes it and steals it and sells it out on the street. There's an aspect to proper disposal that plays into our opioid epidemic that we're kind of in the middle of this all. We're, you know, I think it's gotten better. I've seen deaths actually go down on a national level, but we're certainly not out of the woods.
No, and you know, last thing you want is to have these medications into the trash or into the toilet. You know, we don't want them flushed down the drain. It was only a couple of years ago where there were trace amounts of opioids that were found in seafood off the coast, off the West Coast, up in Puget Sound in that area. And of course, some of them are filter, you know, seafood like mussels and things of that nature. So, you know, we don't want it affecting the environment. And so there are companies that produce products that can safely dispose of those medications. And for a long time, really, the number one source for teenagers is friends and relatives' medicine cabinets.
Yeah.
And you can think about how easy that is, right? I was closer to my grandfather than anybody else in the world, my grandparents. And I would drive up and see them every Sunday night and have supper with them. And if I had to go to the bathroom, I'd be in the bathroom for 2 minutes. And most people keep their medicine in a medicine cabinet or right. in their bedroom or the kitchen, right? So it wouldn't be anything for me to steal a handful of my grandfather's Valium that helped him go to sleep mm-hmm. if I wanted to take something. And he wasn't counting them every night.
Yep.
You know, he wasn't recording them. There's also all kinds of other medications that people are prescribed in large quantities that are not necessarily controlled and we don't worry about or we hadn't worried about for a long time. But because the landscape has changed as far as, you know, we still call it the opioid epidemic, but in truth, it's really a drug epidemic. Mm-hmm. And people are taking just about anything. They're taking combinations. You have a drug such as gabapentin, easily prescribed, not controlled in this state. A lot of different prescribers use it to manage pain. Veterinarians, for example, use it to manage pain. And so if you don't use all your medications, and gabapentin can wind up, because it's not controlled, can wind up being prescribed in large quantities, then you wind up having an opportunity to steal that medication if you're someone that's visiting. Another one, promethazine with codeine. We had for a while a couple of different groups that were entering Pennsylvania from different states that were organized crime groups who were purposely going into pharmacies. And they were, at first, they were using forged prescriptions or they were illegally calling in prescriptions for Prometh. And in the beginning, they were calling in large amounts, like 540 milliliters or something like that. Mm-hmm. And that would usually tip off a pharmacist. So the pharmacy started calling us or they called their local law enforcement. And then we'd set up on the place and we'd wait for an individual to return and we'd arrest them, part of the crew. Or they'd start illegally calling it in where because it's a Schedule 5, so they don't need, obviously, to have a piece of paper. So right. they would call them in, same thing. And this, and there was one group that was coming out of Columbus, Ohio, that was traveling the mid-Atlantic states, going all over, including Pennsylvania. And so they realized pretty quick that we were setting up on it. So what they started doing was jumping the pharmacy counter. You know, instead of getting anybody warning,
right.
they'd jump the counter. They would send, you know, they come in three or four, you know, a little pack, and then they would look for law enforcement, especially in a small town. And if law enforcement wasn't present or they were busy or they were somewhere else, then they could text their guy inside and he'd jump the counter and off he'd go with the Prometh. And the problem with the ProMeth is it is highly sought on the street because that's what we were talking about, Purple Drank, Dirty Sprite, Scissorp. Those are the drinks that kids like that some of the celebrities use. And they mix that, you know, with some sort of clear soda, and then sometimes they'll put a piece of candy to help with the flavoring. And they can get high from it, from the codeine. So anyway, what they wound up doing is because it's expensive on the street, it sells anywhere from $400 to $1,000 a pint.
Jeez.
So it's very expensive. But individuals get prescribed this. I was prescribed it a couple years ago for an upper respiratory chest infection. I think I took one tablespoon, and my doctor only prescribed me 240 milliliters. Mm-hmm. I took one tablespoon, and then I've got all this left over.
Right.
So what do you do with it? You know, you need to get rid of it, and it needs to be disposed of correctly. And so one of the things that I noticed, you know, there are products out there, RX Destroyer comes to mind, where they will actually absorb that liquid. You can put that liquid in there, and
right.
it'll help get rid of it appropriately. And then, so you can put pills in there, you can put liquid, you can put fentanyl patch, you know, all those kind of things. Those are the kind of things that are really important. So you take someone like me, or you take grandma or grandpa, and they're prescribed something like that, and they don't take it all for one reason or another, they've got to get rid of it as quickly as they can. If they know they're not going to use it and they know they're done with it, then they need to have a product to destroy that. Because kids are going to look for that.
Yeah.
You know. And I do a lot of, in what I do now along with the training, I also do a lot of school programs. And one of the things I talk about at the schools is making sure that we're talking to parents and saying get rid of medications that are stored in that house. Because as you said, it could be a pill, could be an oxycodone, it could be a Percocet, could be anything. You know, so many healthcare facilities now will send somebody out the door with pain pills, whether they want it or not. You know, a lot of the individuals will say, happens all the time. They'll come up to me and say, I didn't even want that many pain pills. And they'll say, well, just take them. And if you're not going to use them, we've got to get rid of those because it just opens the door for someone to divert that med.
So a week ago, a really interesting article came out based on California pharmacies, and there was a survey that they did, and this is from the Helio Primary Care blog. Helio is a electronic health record and health system, and they said less than half of the pharmacies surveyed in this this gathering of information were correctly disposing of medications that would have been on a more serious list based on the impact to the environment, as well as based on the impact if they're being diverted. That's really interesting to me. So I kind of want you to speak to what are the challenges for your department in really corralling those health system, hospital system pharmacists and pharmacies to be doing the right things and following protocol, and how does that impact patient health and patient risk?
Well, we certainly don't want those, obviously, those medications like we just talked about being diverted away and individuals having the opportunity to steal them. So we really need, and what I try and encourage most of the facilities when I talk to them, is to make sure they have a product that they can either direct patients to, or if they need to get rid of them, to make sure they have a product that can absorb those medications and render them inert. I mean, they really need to be able to do that. And it needs to be done on a consistent basis, you know, so they can't be diverted. So even medications that are outdated. But like I said, it's not just about the opioids. It is about any kind of medication that there
right.
is out there. So any kind of drug needs to be absorbed into that. And there's different products. You know, there's different products that are out there. I'm used to seeing RX Destroyer in a hospital setting. You know, there's other ones not only that are used, but I'm used to seeing that in there. And that's a good thing because wasting is, of course, one of the vulnerable points in any given hospital system to divert. When it comes to the pharmacies, they're going to have outdated medications, tampered medications, whatever it might be. So they need to have a safe way to get rid of those too.
Medications that fell on the floor.
Anything. Yes.
Yeah.
Anything like that. So anything that they need to get rid of. And they need, I think, to have a place to be able to destroy them. And I like products that provide that opportunity for them to do it.
Alan, are you doing training for any of these health system pharmacies to kind of bring their attention to things they might overlook because of how busy they get?
Well, I provide trainings, and it's an overall approach. I mean, obviously, I have trainings that I do for these systems and the practitioners, and it depends on how much they think they can absorb. So I can do a training for 4 hours, I can do it for 3 days. Okay. I have enough material to do that. And so obviously when they ask me for less, I have to trim somewhere. But they usually wind up getting core material is sort of the same. So I talk a little bit about the impact of what's going on, things that are happening now, current drug trends, things that we're seeing on the street, things that impact them, ways to look at their prescription drug monitoring program information in a different way. You know, for example, like I said, doctor shopping is going to change. I mean, we've done a really good job, I think, at virtually eliminating that, but we haven't eliminated it. Mm-hmm. You know, patients will find it. Someone with a substance use disorder is going to find a way to get medications. They're highly motivated to do it. They're going to be creative, and they want to get high, and they want to get high now. They also do things to avoid withdrawal symptoms because they're afraid of that. So as we have tightened regulations and do things, they find other ways. So this is some of the stuff that I bring to them, and I show them the different drugs that are being diverted now. Most folks now are really looking for methamphetamine, a stimulant, or they're looking for heroin, you know, or heroin derivatives such as fentanyl and those sort of things. Mm-hmm. So they're really seeking out those two. But they'll take just about anything. So they've learned the combinations. You know, they've learned that and combinations have been around for a while. It's not like it's new. It's just become more now because as we've tightened up the reins on opioids, they're looking to things such as benzodiazepines or muscle relaxers, combining those with an opiate. So although they can't get as many opiates as they want, if they combine a benzo in there, it gives them a better effect. Right. So they're going to get a better high. So they're doing things like that. And then we have to guard for that, and we have to look for those sort of things. So that's part of the training that I do when I go out. So
does that come with a continuing education, a CE component?
It can. We don't have a mechanism to provide that at the Attorney General's office. But what I normally do is if they book me out far enough and they arrange for the CEs, I can fill out that paperwork for them, which I've done many times. And then that gives them the opportunity to have those CEs or CEUs.
Right. Yeah, there's a company called CEI that really concentrates on pharmacist education. I'm gonna send this podcast to them directly because I think they need to engage organizations like yours throughout the states. You know, we're in Pennsylvania, obviously. This is our home, and this is where we work, and I'm podcasting out of Hiller, Pennsylvania. But I think of so many hospital system pharmacies, long-term care closed-door pharmacies, community pharmacies, who are trying to keep up with the demand of their services. And I would think that drug disposal sometimes gets overlooked in ways, or the proper drug disposal. Is there a cyclical calendar suggestion that you give to a pharmacy where you're saying, hey, do an audit of your entire inventory once every X number of months or number of weeks? Or is there something in effect where they start paying attention specifically to expired for disposal time of certain medications?
Well, I don't have anything like that. I obviously tell them to follow their DEA regulations, their Code of Federal Regulations. They have to do that. So they really need to pay close attention to that. There are certain drugs that are more sought off than others, but like I said, unfortunately now it's every drug. So we can't count on that. We can't count on the it's not just the controlled. It can be the non-controlled. So what I try and do is just get them to understand what's new, what's trending now, and some of the stuff that we have, including stuff that's on the street. Because you can take somebody, for example, we had a girl in Erie, Pennsylvania, who was buying flubromazolam, which is an illicit benzodiazepine. She was addicted to Xanax. She liked Xanax, and her doctor scaled it back. And then so she winds up buying this drug out of China illicitly and overdoses from it. She doesn't die, but she overdoses. And when you start mixing those with opioids, that's part of that problem. So trying to make sure that pharmacists are paying attention to what the trends are in case they have someone that presents for just a regular prescription, but then they're mixing it with something else. They're going outside the lines of what the prescriber or the pharmacist may even know about, and just trying to help them recognize that. But you bring up an interesting point, too, when you're talking about disposal. You think about hospice situations, right? You have patients who, and obviously, and the last thing that I want or any investigator wants in diversion is to get in the middle of practice of medicine or denying patients pain medicine. That's not the point.
Exactly.
It's not what we do. We're trying to make sure that people are following the rules so that everybody's protected and safe. That's the idea. We're not trying to make it harder on doctors or facilities or anybody else. We're just trying to partner with them. And we need their help to do that. And hospice is one of those areas, of course, where it's particularly sensitive because you have somebody that could have large quantities of pain medications and then they pass. And then the family has these medications and they're relying on one nurse maybe to get rid of those meds. And what I think it would be better is if you had a product that was not, if you're going to give a product to that is a painkiller, a powerful painkiller, then let's give them a disposal system as well, so that when they do pass, they have a big enough unit that they can do that. And for example, I think RX Destroyer is one of those types of, and there's other companies too, but that's one that has a big unit that they could supply to those folks so that when those medics, when someone does and they're left over, you're getting rid of them with somebody else so that they can't be hit out onto the
street. I actually talked with the RX Destroyer team about that, where I said if you give a prescription of a specific medication that you know is most likely to be diverted or is more harmful than others from a what type of medication it really is, then how can we make it kind of like a consumer must, you know, a criteria that if you take this prescription, you also have to weigh to properly dispose of it. And here's the directions. And oh, by the way, here's a container of this product, RX Destroyer, for example, that if you do this, it will disintegrate the medication properly and make it so that you can throw it in the trash after you're done properly disposing of it. I think that would be an interesting way to ensure the public safety. But you and I, Alan, before we started the recording, we were talking about technology and software systems that are able to kind of track out inventory amounts and levels. And I'll bet you any money, I know without a doubt, that it's also tracking the age of that medication based on the lot. So you have a medication come in, there's 1,000 tablets of this medication. That barcode probably gives you the date. It gives you, you know, pedigree information. It gives you all this stuff. It would be easy enough to load that into the pharmacy system to trigger some kind of cyclical inventory time that the system would say, hey, we have 16 of these 1,000 medications left over. And by the information that's provided from that barcode, we know that it's expired. Therefore, it's time to dispose of it properly.
Oh, you're absolutely right. And, you know, with serialization track and trace coming,
right,
and it's going to come eventually. So the lowest possible unit easily put into that software, so it triggers. And then it doesn't go out to a patient when it's expired and is potentially either not effective or maybe even dangerous. I mean, I'm not a clinician, so I can't – I'm not a practitioner, so I can't get, you know, into pharmacology. but I understand the importance. If it's expired, you've got to dispose of it correctly. And just because you and I know it's expired and we're not going to touch it, someone who has a substance use disorder isn't going to care whether it's expired. They're going to take it in the hopes that it's going to give them the effect that they're after. So we've got to make sure that we get rid of those medications too.
It's amazing to see how the cyclical kind of – how all this ties together. And I'll bet that if you talk to the common, you know, guy or gal out there on, you know, the common consumer, they wouldn't realize that disposal – plays right into this opioid slash, like you were saying, drug epidemic that we have in the country.
Yeah, and if you think about places that are particularly vulnerable, I mean, most pharmacies, especially the national chains of the programs, they have pretty good programs in place to monitor things of that nature. Hospital systems are getting much better with data integration, so they can they can monitor that too. And of course, that's by, you know, a pharmacist, you know, their director of pharmacy, who's going to handle a lot of that and carry that load. But when you get into some of the nursing homes and some of the long-term care facilities, they're still way behind because that technology is expensive and that equipment's expensive. So even for them, even more so, making sure that we don't have expired medications, those sort of things, and making sure they have appropriate disposal methods.
So, Alan, if someone wanted to engage and wanted to kind of talk with you, maybe even try to get in touch with your department to do an education session for a group of pharmacists, I think the Pennsylvania Pharmacists Association, led by Pat Epple, for example, they just had their annual conference. I wasn't able to go because of previous commitments, but that organization would, I think, be a conduit for you with the education and the understanding of proper drug disposal, limiting diversion, and what pharmacy operators can do.
Yeah, they can contact me anytime. Any group can contact me that's interested in having some sort of training. And I offer all kinds of flexibility to it. So if somebody can only absorb an hour and that's what they can afford, I'll give them an hour. I give them my best for an hour. And if they can absorb more, sometimes I do them in a series. So I might, for example, I was just down at a doctor's office before I came here, and I did an hour program for them today. And next month I will do another hour. So it's in a series. And then I'll do another hour. So it's, they get 3 months. They see me for 3 months in a row, and I do an hour each time. And then they're not sitting there for a full 4 hours or a full day. So I'm very flexible. It's just on my schedule. They can reach me at my email address, which is amcgill@attorneygeneral.gov, or they can go to the Pennsylvania Attorney General's website. My name and information's there. The only thing they're not going to see is there's no photographs of me. I've been successful keeping that off the web because of my undercover background. So I just don't want it. And it's not about me. It's about trying to help them. So they'll see my name. They'll see lectures, my contact information. They can also call me on the phone if they want. My number is 814-434-2499 and leave me a message, and I'll get back to them. And I'm happy to go anywhere across Pennsylvania to do that. I'm pretty fortunate that Attorney General Shapiro affords me the opportunity to do this. And he recognizes, that this education, this partnership with pharmacies and with healthcare is really important. And whatever we can lend to that, that's our job.
That's awesome. I will have your contact information in our show notes. So if you're driving right now, if you're working out, you're taking a walk, don't worry about it. It'll be in the show notes. You can find it at this podcast episode number, which we will have in the title. And Alan, this has been really interesting conversation with you. I'm going to invite you back. And before you go, talk to us real quick about this national organization that you're part of that actually has pharmacists involved as well.
Yeah, so I am actually the chairman of the executive committee of NASCA, which is the National Association of State Controlled Substance Authorities. And so it's every, I think we have just about every state in the United States that's a part of it. And those are our regular members. And these are state attorney generals, these are health departments, state departments, whoever is the authority of controlled substances in their state. That's what this is. And then we have associate members. And those associate members and sponsors, which we always need because, we're basically a group of government agencies trying to piece this together. And so we have pharmaceutical manufacturers, we have distributors, we have retail pharmacies, we have electronic companies, data companies, tech companies, anything you can think of are members of our organization. And we have an annual training conference every year. Our training conference this year is in October in Birmingham, Alabama, and it rotates around to different places. And you can catch us on the web. It's NASCA, NASCSA, .com, I believe. It might be .org.
I'll find it and put it in the show notes, too. Yep.
And it's a good group, and they provide a really nice training conference. We have educational webinars. We also have a NASCA podcast that we do and stuff, so it's a good thing.
That's terrific. Well, Alan, I want to thank you for being on the Pharmacy Podcast Nation. I think this is an extremely an important topic that sometimes gets overlooked, and I think pharmacists out there need to get refreshed every once in a while.
Well, thank you very much for having me on. I really appreciate it, and I enjoyed the conversation.
Enjoyed the coffee as well, right?
I did. Very good. Come down and see him down here and get a cup of coffee and have a nice conversation.
Come down to the Daily Grind offices in Hiller, Pennsylvania. Well, we thank you so much for listening to the Pharmacy Podcast, listening to an interesting conversation about proper drug disposal with Alan McGill, and we'll talk to you soon.
Thank you for listening to the Pharmacy Podcast Network. If you enjoy the leading podcast network dedicated to the business and profession of pharmacy, please write us a review on Apple Podcasts and let us know which channel is your favorite. And remember, the pharmacist is the hub of healthcare.